What's up, rockers? Welcome to the Journey Through Rock. My name is DJ Blue, and today we're going to be talking about a type of music that started out very underground, very unpopular, and today is known as the most mainstream type of rock from the 1990s, and it's alternative rock. So alternative rock is a category of rock music that emerged from the independent music underground of the 1970s, and it became widely popular in the 1990s. The word alternative kind of refers to the genre's distinction from mainstream or commercial rock or pop music of that time. In 1988, Billboard introduced alternative into their charting system to reflect the rise of format across radio stations in the US by stations like K-Rock FM in Los Angeles and WER FM in New York. The genre can be found as early as the 1960s, with bands such as Devolved Underground and other artists continue to evolve alternative rock throughout the 1980s. Traditionally, alternative rock broadly consisted of music that differed greatly in terms of its sound, social context, and regional roots. So throughout the 1980s, magazines and zines, college radio airplay, and kind of word of mouth really increased the whole diversity of alternative rock. And it helped define a number of distinct styles such as noise pop, indie rock, grunge, and shoegazing. So before the term alternative rock came into actual common usage around 1990, the sort of music to which it referred to were known of by a variety of terms. In 1979, Terry Tolkien used the term alternative music to describe the group he was writing about. In 1979, Dallas radio station had a late-night new wave show entitled Rock and Roll Alternative. College rock was also used in the U.S. to describe the music during the 1980s due to its links to college radio circuit and the taste of college students. In the UK, dozens of small kind of do-it-yourself record labels emerged as a result of this punk subculture. So the use of the term alternative to describe rock music originated around the mid-1980s. At the time, the common music industry terms for the cutting-edge music were new music and postmodern. And it kind of indicated the freshness and a tendency to kind of make a new context of sounds of the past. In the late 1990s, the definition became more specific. In 97, Neil Strauss of New York Times defined alternative rock as hard-edged rock distinguished by brittle 70s-inspired guitar, riffing and singers agonizing over their problems until they take on epic proportions. So early American alternative bands combined punk influences with folk music and mainstream music influences. So by the late 1980s, the American alternative scene was dominated by styles ranging from quirky alternative pop. The breakthrough success of Nirvana led to the widespread popularization of alternative rock in the 1990s, and it kind of created a new openness to alternative rock among commercial radio stations and opened a door for a lot of other bands that were similar. However, many alternative rock artists kind of rejected their success, one of which being Nirvana, because it kind of conflicted with their more rebellious do-it-yourself ethic of the genre that kind of was created before the mainstream exposure and their ideas of artistic sort of authenticity. So with that, I want to introduce you with the band that sparked the alternative rock scene, which is Nirvana. Nirvana is an American rock band formed in Aberdeen, Washington in 1987. They were founded by lead singer, songwriter, and guitarist Kurt Cobain and bassist Chris Novoselic. The band went through a succession of drummers before recruiting their final one, David Grohl, in 1990. So when Nirvana recorded their first album, Bleach, Cobain felt that he had to fit the expectations of the sub-pop grunge sound to build a fan base, and suppressed his more arty and pop songwriting in favor of a more rock sound. Nirvana used dynamic shifts that went from quiet to loud, and Cobain sought to mix heavy and pop musical sounds, saying, I wanted to be totally Led Zeppelin in a way, and then be totally extreme punk rock, and then do real wimpy pop songs. When Cobain heard the Pixies' 1988 album Surfer Rosa after recording Bleach, he felt it had the sound he wanted to achieve, but he had been too intimidated to try. So Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic met while attending Aberdeen High School in Washington State. They became really good friends while frequenting practice space of the Melbournes. Cobain wanted to form a band with Novoselic, but Novoselic actually didn't respond for a long time, so Cobain gave him a demo tape of his project Fecal Matter. 3 years after the first two have met, Novoselic notified Cobain that he had finally listened to the Fecal Matter demo and suggested that they started a group. Their first band was called The Sellouts, and it was a Creedence Clearwater Revival tribute band. So during its initial months, the band went through a series of names including Fecal Matter, Skid Row, and Ted Ed Fred. The group settled on Nirvana because, according to Cobain, "I wanted a name that was kind of beautiful or nice and pretty instead of a mean, raunchy punk name like the Angry Samoans." Nirvana released its first single, which was a cover of Shocking Blues' Love Buzz, in November of 1988 on the Seattle's independent record label Sub Pop. They did their first ever interview with John Robb and Sounds, which made the release its single of the week. The following month, the band began recording its debut album, Bleach, with local producer Jack Endino. So Bleach was influenced by the heavy dirge rock of the Melvins and the 1980s punk rock of Mudhoney, as well as the 1970s heavy metal of Black Sabbath. Initially, DGC Records was actually hoping to sell 250,000 copies of their album Nevermind. However, the first single, and this was titled Smells Like Teen Spirit, quickly gained a lot of popularity and boosted a lot of airplay on music video on MTV. So as they toured Europe during late 1991, the band found that its shows were dangerously oversold and that television crews were becoming a constant presence on stage, and that Smells Like Teen Spirit was almost too much for radio and music televisions. So by the end of 1991, Nevermind was selling 400,000 copies a week in the US, and by 1992, the album displaced Michael Jackson's Dangerous at number one on the Billboard album charts and topped the charts in numerous other countries. So the month that Nevermind reached number one, Billboard proclaimed that Nirvana is that rare band that has everything: critical acclaim, industry respect, pop radio appeal, and a rock-solid college alternative bass. So the album eventually sold over 7 million copies in the US and over 30 million worldwide, and Nirvana's sudden success was kind of credited for popularizing alternative rock and ending the dominance of hair metal. Several weeks after they finished recording these sessions, stories were ran in the Chicago Tribune and Newsweek that quoted sources claiming that DGC considered the album unreleasable. As a result, fans began to believe that the band's creative vision might be compromised by their label. So while stories about the DGC were being talked about at the time and kind of saying that the album, what they were saying about the album was untrue, the band actually was unhappy with certain aspects of Alibine's mixes, and they thought that the bass levels were too low, and Cobain felt that Heart-Shaped Box and All Apologies did not sound perfect. But In Utero topped both American and British album charts. In Utero went on to sell over 5 million copies in the US, and that October, Nirvana embarked on its first tour of the US in 2 years with support from Half Japanese and the Breeders. In early 1994, Nirvana embarked on a European tour. It was Nirvana's final concert that took place in Munich, Germany on March 1st. And in Rome on the morning of March 4th, Cobain's wife, whose name was Courtney Love, found Cobain unconscious in their hotel room, and he was rushed to the hospital. Cobain had reacted to a combination of prescribed medication and alcohol, and the rest of the tour had to be canceled. But unfortunately, in the following weeks, Cobain's heroin addiction resurfaced. So following an intervention, Cobain convinced himself to admit into a drug rehab center. After less than a week, he left the rehabilitation facility and returned to Seattle. And a week later, he was found dead on a self-inflicted gunshot wound at his home. So rest in peace to a musical legend. And after this short break, we're going to move it on over to England, where Radiohead called out all the creeps. My name is DJ Blue, and you're listening to The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Voting is an essential part of our democracy, and democracy requires participation. And if I don't vote, someone else will, and I definitely do not want someone else deciding on laws that will affect me, my family, and my community. Voting is our civic duty, and civic duty is the rent we pay for living. So I hope everyone joins me in voting in every single election. For more resources on how to vote, visit www.eac.gov. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communications and Media Studies Department at the Dominican University of California.
Welcome back, rockers. My name is DJ Blue, and this is The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio. So we left off with Nirvana's huge influence in these later years. Now I want to head on over to alternative rock on the other side of the ocean with Radiohead. So Radiohead is an English rock band formed in Abingdon, Oxfordshire in 1985. The band consists of Tom York on vocals, guitar, piano, and keyboards, brothers Johnny Greenwood on lead guitar, keyboards, and other instruments, and Colin Greenwood on bass, Ed O'Brien on guitar and backing vocals, and Philip Selway on drums and percussion. So the members of Radiohead actually met while attending Abingdon School, and it was an independent school for boys in that area. Guitarist and singer Tom York and the bassist Colin Greenwood were in the same year. Ed O'Brien and Philip Selway were in the year above, and Johnny Greenwood and his brother Colin were 2 years below them. So Radiohead recorded their debut release titled The Drill EP with Hufford and Edge at Courtyard Studios. It was released in 1992, and its chart performance was actually poor. With the release of Creep, a single that year, Radiohead began to receive attention in the British music press, not at all favorable. NME actually described them as a lily-livered excuse for a rock band, and Creep was blacklisted by the BBC radio because it was deemed too depressing. But in 1993, Radiohead began to attract listeners elsewhere. The song Creep had been played frequently on Israeli radio by influential DJ Yoav Kutner, and in March, after the song became a huge hit in that country, Radiohead was actually invited to Tel Aviv for their first gig overseas, and around the same time, Creep began receiving airplay in US radio stations. So by the time Radiohead began their first North American tour in 1993, the music video for Creep was in heavy rotation on MTV, and the song rose to number 2 on the US Modern chart, entered the lower reaches of the top 40 pop chart, and hit number 7 in the UK singles chart when EMI released it in the UK that September. So having introduced more songs on tour, Radiohead finished recording their second album by the end of 1994 and released The Bends in 1995. The album was driven by more dense riffs and kind of different atmospheres from the three guitarists, so with greater use of keyboards than their original debut. And this album actually received stronger reviews for its songwriting and performances. So while Radiohead was seen as kind of the outsiders of the Britpop scene, they were finally successful in their home country with the Bends. And this included singles such as Fake Plastic Trees, High and Dry, Just, and Street Spirits Fade Out. And it made their way to chart success. So Radiohead released their third album titled OK Computer in May of 1997. The album found the band experimenting with song structures and incorporating more ambient and electronic influences. And it actually prompted Rolling Stone to call them a stunning art rock tour de force. Radiohead kind of denied being part of the progressive rock genre, but critics began to compare their work to Pink Floyd, and their early 1970s work influenced Johnny Greenwood's guitar parts at the time. So some compared OK Computer thematically to Floyd's bestseller, The Dark Side of the Moon. OK Computer was Radiohead's first number one UK chart debut and brought them commercial success around the world. They peaked at number 21 in the US charts, and it kind of received a lot of mainstream recognition here and got their first Grammy Award, winning Best Alternative Album and a nomination for Album of the Year. Paranoid, Adjoyed, Karma Police, and No Surprises were released as singles, and Karma Police was one of the most successful songs internationally. So OK Computer went on to become a staple of the best of British album lists. So over the years, Radiohead's musical style has been described as art rock, alternative rock, electronica, experimental rock, progressive rock, Britpop, grunge, art pop, and electronic rock. So among Radiohead's earliest influences, they were actually Queen, Bob Dylan, Pink Floyd, and they have cited 60s and 70s jazz artists such as Miles Davis, Charles Mingus, and Alice Coltrane as influences on their albums such as OK Computer, Kid A, and Amnesiac. But according to Johnny Greenwood, he stated, "We bring in our favorite jazz albums and say, we want to do this, and we enjoy the sound of our failing." So drummer Clive Deamer, who has recorded and performed with Radiohead in the most recent years, said that Radiohead did not see themselves as a rock band and felt they had more closer parallels to jazz music. Radiohead had sold over 30 million albums worldwide by 2011, and their work places highly in both listener polls and critics' lists of the best music of the 1990s and 2000s. So, now moving on a little closer to home, I want to introduce the Red Hot Chili Peppers. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are an American rock band formed in Los Angeles in 1983. The band consists of vocalist Anthony Kiedis, bassist Flea, drummer Chad Smith, and guitarist John Frusciante. So with over 80 million records sold worldwide, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are one of the best-selling bands of all time. They are the most successful band in the history of alternative rock, with the records for the most number one singles, which is 13, the most cumulative weeks at number one, which is 85, and the most top 10 songs, which is 25 on the Billboard Alternative Songs chart. So this band met as classmates at Fairfax High School. Their early names included Tony Flo and the Miraculously Majestic Masters of Mayhem, and their first performance was at the Rhythm Lounge Club to a crowd of approximately 30 people, and they actually opened for Gary and Neighbors Voices, and they were inspired by punk-funk acts, kind of like Contortions and Defunct, and they improvised music while Cadiz rapped. So the band released their debut album, titled The Red Hot Chili Peppers, in August of 1984. And this album had airplay on college radio and MTV, kind of helped build a fan base. The album sold 300,000 copies. Another album, Freaky Styly, in 1985, kind of combined various elements of punk and funk into the band's music, and allowed their music to incorporate more distinct styles. The band actually indulged in heavy heroin use while recording this album, which influenced the lyrics and musical direction that they went towards. And in 1991, Blood Sugar Sex Magique was released, and the song Give It Away was the first single, and it became one of the band's best known songs, and in 1992 won a Grammy Award for Best Hard Rock Performance with Vocal. It became the band's first number one single on Modern Rock Chart, and a ballad Under the Bridge was released as the second single and reached number two on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. And as of 2016, it remains the band's highest position on the chart. But Frusciante was actually troubled by fame and began having a falling out with Kytus. He isolated himself from the band and developed a secret heroin addiction. So in an appearance of Saturday Night Live, he actually performed off-key, and Kytus believed that he wanted to sabotage the performance on purpose. So Frusciante actually quit the band after the show in 1992 and returned to LA and spent years living and kind of struggling with his addiction. So the band began to tour for one hot minute in Europe in 1995 without him. So the US tour was postponed after Smith broke his wrist, and in 1977 several shows were canceled following the deteriorating band relations and injuries and a lot of drug use. So with no guitarist, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on the verge of breaking up with all these issues going on. So in the recent years following all these departures, Frusciante's heroin addiction had left them in poverty and near death. So in 1998, Flea visited and the recovered Frusciante and kind of asked him to rejoin the band. Frusciante actually began sobbing and said nothing would make him happier. So in 1999, after more than a year of production, the Red Hot Chili Peppers released Californication, which was their seventh studio album, and it sold over 16 million copies and remains their most successful album. It produced three number one rock hits, and these are Scar Tissue, Other Side, and Californication. In 2006, the Chili Peppers actually released their ninth album, which was Stadium Arcadium. And although they initially planned to release a trilogy of these albums, they chose to release a 28-track double album. And it was their first album to debut at number one on the US charts, where it stayed for 2 weeks and debuted at number one in the UK and 25 other countries. And one thing to note about the Red Hot Chili Peppers also is their activism. In 1990, the Chili Peppers appeared in PSA ads for Rock the Vote, a nonprofit organization in the US that kind of geared toward increasing voter turnout in the US presidential election among voters 18 to 24. And in July of 2007, the band performed on behalf of a former US Vice President Al Gore, who invited the band to perform at the London version of his Live Earth concerts. And these were held to raise awareness towards global warming and solving the most critical environmental issues of our time. So in 2018, Smith joined the band again on his benefit, and they performed at Moore Theater in Seattle to help raise money for Cancer for College. And the event raised $300,000 in college scholarship money for students that survived cancer. And now it is the bottom of the hour, which means it is time for a quick new update. What is going on in the world right now? Well, President Trump is taking steps to subvert the results of the 2020 elections, and he's pushing for legal challenges in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Arizona. But election law experts actually stated that Biden is certain to walk into the Oval Office in January, and Trump's efforts are only doing real damage to public faith and integrity of US elections. And Biden added, "I just think it's totally irresponsible." So while Biden has a clear win, the official president-elect title and fraud allegations will hopefully be overcoming in early December. After this quick break, we will be able to discuss more grunge sounds such as Nirvana. My name is DJ Blue, and this is A Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Did you know that wearing a mask when outdoors or in public areas while social distancing helps shorten the duration of any pandemic? Maintaining a distance of about 6 feet from any other person helps as well. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Welcome back, rockers. This is the Journey Through Rock with your host, DJ Blue, right here on Penguin Radio. So one of the most iconic bands and one of my personal favorites that I want to discuss next is Pearl Jam. So Pearl Jam is an American rock band formed in 1990 in Seattle, Washington. The band's lineup consists of the founding members Jeff Ament on bass guitar, Stone Gossard on rhythm guitar, Mike McCready lead guitar, and Eddie Vedder on lead vocals and guitar, as well as Matt Cameron on drums, who joined in 1998. So Ament and McCready explained that they came up with Pearl and that the band later settled on Pearl Jam after attending a concert by Neil Young in which he kind of extended his songs as improvisations of 15 to 20 minutes in length. The band has promoted in actually a lot of causes, including awareness of Crohn's disease, which Mike McCready suffers from, Ticketmaster venue, monopolization in the environment and wildlife protection, among others. So the guitarist Stone Gossard has been active in environmental pursuits and has been an advocate of Pearl Jam's carbon neutral policy and offsetting the band's environmental impact. Pearl Jam has performed numerous benefit concerts in aid of charities. For example, the band headlined a Seattle concert in 2001 to support the United Nations efforts to combat world hunger. The band also added a date at the Chicago House of Blues to its 2005 tour to help the victims of Hurricane Katrina, and the concert proceeds were donated to Habitat for Humanity, the American Red Cross, and the Jazz Foundation of America. So compared with the other grunge bands of the early 1990s, Pearl Jam's style is noticeably less heavy and kind of goes back to the classic rock music of the 1970s. Pearl Jam has cited many punk rock and classic rock bands as influences, and this included The Who, Led Zeppelin, Neil Young, Kiss, and the Ramones. Pearl Jam's success has been attributed to its sound, and it kind of includes the riff of heavy stadium rock of the 1970s with the grit and anger of 80s post-punk, and without ever neglecting the hooks and choruses. So released on August 27th, 1991, the album 10 contained 11 tracks dealing with dark subjects like depression, suicide, loneliness, and murder. 10's musical style, influenced by classic rock, combined with an expansive, more harmonic vocabulary with their sound. The album was slow to sell, but by the second half of 1992, it became a breakthrough success, being certified gold and reaching number 2 on the Billboard charts. 10 produced hit singles such as Alive, Even Flow, and Jeremy. And these were originally interpreted as an anthem by many. Vedder actually revealed that Alive tells a story of a semi-autobiographer tale of a son discovering that his father is actually his stepfather, while his mother's grief turns her to sexually embrace her son, who strongly resembles the biological father. The song Jeremy and its accompanying video was actually inspired by a true story, in which a high school student shot himself in front of his classmates. 10 stayed on the Billboard charts for nearly 5 years and has gone on to become one of the highest selling rock records ever, going 13 times platinum. So with the success of 10, Pearl Jam became a key member of the new grunge explosion of the 1990s, along with Alice in Chains, Nirvana, and Soundgarden. So the band was criticized by the music press. They actually stated that Pearl Jam was trying to steal money from young alternative kids' pockets. Nirvana's Kurt Cobain actually attacked Pearl Jam and claimed that the band were commercial sellouts and argued that 10 was not a true alternative album because it had so many prominent guitar leads. So Pearl Jam headed into the studio in early 1993, facing the challenges of following up commercial success of its debut. McCready actually said that the band was blown up pretty big and everything was pretty crazy. Pearl Jam's second album, Verse, sold 950,378 copies in its first week of release and outperformed all other entries in the Billboard Top 10 that week combined. The album set the record for most copies of an album sold in its first week of release, which held until broken by Garth Brooks' 1998 album, Double Live. This album included singles Go, Daughter, Animal, and Descendant. Paul Evans of Rolling Stone said, "Few American bands have arrived more clearly talented than this one did with 10, and V's tops even that debut." Vitalogy stands as Pearl Jam's most original and more uncompromising album. Many of their songs on this album appeared to be inspired by the pressures of the fame they were going through. The song Spin the Black Circle was an homage to Vinyl Records, and it won a Grammy Award in 1996 for the Best Hard Rock Performance. Vitalogy also included the songs Not For You, Corduroy, Better Man, and Immortality. Better Man was a song originally written and performed by Vedder while in Bad Radio, but it reached number one on the Billboard Mainstream Rock chart, spending a total of 8 weeks there. Finally, in 1998, Pearl Jam recorded Last Kiss, which was a cover of a 1960s ballad made famous by J. Frank Wilson and the Cavaliers. And it was recorded during a sound check and released on the band's 1998 Fan Club Christmas single. The following year, the cover was put into heavy rotation across the country, and it was released to the public as a single in 1999, with all of its proceeds going to the aids of refugees of the Kosovo War. And finally, a fun fact, 2004 marked the first time that Pearl Jam licensed the song for the usage on a television show, and it was a snippet of their song Yellow Better and was used in the final episode of the TV series Friends. So, another band from Washington I want to discuss, the Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters are an American rock band formed in Seattle, Washington in 1994, and it was founded by former Nirvana drummer Dave Grohl as a one-man project following the dissolution of Nirvana after the suicide of Kurt Cobain. The group took its name from Foo Fighter, which was a nickname coined by Allied aircraft pilots of UFOs and other aerial phenomena. The Foo Fighters was initially compared to Grohl's previous group, Nirvana. Grohl acknowledged that Nirvana's songwriter Kurt Cobain was a huge influence on his songwriting. He stated, "Through Kurt, I saw the beauty of a minimalism and the importance of music that stripped down." Foo Fighters also used the technique of shifting between quiet verses and loud choruses. And Grohl said that this was influenced by the members of Nirvana liking The Knack, Bay City Rollers, Beatles, and ABBA as much as we liked Flipper and Black Flag, I suppose. So Grohl hoped to stay anonymous and released the recordings in a limited run under the name Foo Fighters, taken from Foo Fighter, a World War II term for unidentified flying objects. So their album, The Color and Shape, was released in May 1997, and it included singles such as Monkey Wrench, Everlong, My Hero, and Walking After You. Smear left the Foo Fighters in 1997 because he was apparently exhausted and burnt out, but he was replaced by Grohl's former Scream bandmate, Franz Stahl. So Stahl toured with the Foo Fighters for the next few months and appeared on 2 tracks and recorded for movie soundtracks. A re-recording of Walk After You for the X-Files and A320 for Godzilla, a B-side from My Hero single Dear Lover appeared in the horror film Scream 2. So the tour for the Color and the Shape album included a main stage performance at the 1998 Glastonbury Festival, another at 1998 Ozfest replacing Korn, and it kind of started with the performance at the 1998 Reading Festival, which were both in England. In January of 2000, Nate Mendel led benefit concerts in Hollywood for AIDS, a group Alive and Well AIDS Alternative, with a speech by founder Christine Maggiore, and free copies of her self-published book, and this was titled What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Was Wrong. Additionally, the band's official website featured a section devoted to Alive and Well. Sandra Thurman, the director of Office of National AIDS Policy, stated that this was extraordinarily irresponsible behavior because there's no doubt about the link between HIV and AIDS is the respected scientific community. Links and references to Alive and Well have since been removed from the band's website and no further mentions or shows of support have been made. With that, I will leave you for another quick break. You are listening to The Journey Through Rock right here on Penguin Radio with your host, DJ Blue. Be right back, rockers.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Why do we bow? We bow because it's important to exercise our right to bow. We bow on issues that matter to us, such as healthcare, education, the economy, civil rights, and immigration. With our votes, we have the power to shape our country and our communities. Your vote matters. Yeah! So please, register to vote. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Welcome back, rockers. This is The Journey Through Rock, right here on Penguin Radio with your host, DJ Blue. We left off with bands from the north in Washington. Now let's bring it back a little closer to home with Weezer. So Weezer is an American rock band formed in Los Angeles, California in 1992. Since 2001, the band has consisted of Rivers Cuomo on lead vocals, lead guitar and keyboards, Patrick Wilson on drums, Brian Bell on guitar, backing vocals, and keyboards, and Scott Schreiner on bass backing vocals. So Weezer formed on February 14th of 1992. Their first show was in March of 1992, and they actually closed for Keanu Reeves' band Dog Star. They took their name from a nickname of Cuomo's father gave them. Cuomo gave Sharp one ear to get the band a record deal before Cuomo accepted a scholarship at UC Berkeley. That November, Weezer recorded a demo, The Kitchen Tape, and this included a version of the future Weezer single, Say It Ain't So. So the demo was heard by Todd Sullivan, an A&R man at Geffen Records, and he signed them in 1993. So Weezer is also known as the Blue Album, and this was released in May of 1994. Geffen originally did not wish to release this single because he wanted to see what sales could be generated by just word of mouth alone. DJ Marco Collins of the Seattle radio station started playing Undone, the Sweater song, leading Geffen to release it as the first single. The music video was directed by Spike Johns and filmed in an unbroken take. It featured Weezer performing on a soundstage with little action. There was a bar, a pack of dogs swarming the set, and the video became an instant hit on MTV. Johns also directed Weezer's second video, Buddy Holly, and it kind of made the band with footage from the 1970s TV sitcom Happy Days. And the video actually achieved heavy rotation on MTV and went on to win 4 MTV Video Music Awards, including Breakthrough Video and Best Alternative Music Video, and 2 Billboard Music Video Awards. Weezer's second album, Pinkerton, was released in 1996. This album produced 3 singles, or El Scorcho, The Good Life, and Pink Triangle. So in addition to a lawsuit that was filed against the band over the title of the album, Pinkerton sold poorly compared to the Blue Album, and this was due to its more darker and more abrasive sound, and it was actually voted one of the worst albums of 1996. But in the summer of 2000, Weezer went on tour, including dates on the popular Vans Warped Tour, and the band's set list consisted of 14 new songs, when 13 of these songs did not appear on the Weezer's next album. Fans of the song started a petition demanding the release of studio versions. Eventually, the band went back into the studio to produce a third album titled The Green Album, and shortly after the release, Weezer went on another American tour, and the band attracted a new generation of fans thanks to heavy MTV rotation for the videos and the hit singles Hash Pipe and Island in the Sun. So the album's first single was titled Beverly Hills. This became a hit in the US and worldwide, staying on the charts for several months after its release, and became the first Weezer song to hit number 1 on the Billboard Modern Rock chart. Beverly Hills was nominated for Best Rock Song at the 48th Annual Grammy Awards, the first ever Grammy nomination for the band. The video was also nominated for Best Rock Video at the 2005 MTV Video Music Awards. The second single released from Make Believe was We Are All on Drugs, but MTV refused to play the song, so Weezer had to re-record the lyrics by replacing On Drugs with In Love and renaming the song We Are All in Love. Following a persistent Twitter campaign by a fan, Weezer released a cover of Toto's song Africa on May 29th, 2018, a little more recent. Prior to this, the band released a cover of Rosanna to troll their fans, actually. Africa reached number 1 on the Billboard Alternative Songs chart in August of 2018, and it kind of became the band's first number 1 single since Pork and Beans in 2008. 2 days later, on August 10th, Toto responded to their cover by releasing a cover of Weezer's single Hash Pipe. The success of Africa cover actually led Weezer to record a whole new album of covers. The Teal album was a surprise release on January 24th of 2019. So on March 9th of 2010, Weezer appeared on an episode of the children's daytime TV show Yo Gabba Gabba and performed the song All My Friends Are Insects. The song appeared on a compilation soundtrack album for the show Yo Gabba Gabba, Music is Awesome, Volume 2, as well as a bonus track for the Weezer album Hurley. On June 11th of 2010, the band released a new single, Represent, as an unofficial anthem for the US men's soccer team to coincide with the 2010 FIFA World Cup. So although technically unofficial, the song was embraced by the team, and on June 23rd of that year, US Soccer released a music video on their official YouTube channel featuring the footage of the US team with footage of Weezer performing. And finally, in 2010, the band recorded a cover of I'm a Believer for the movie Shrek Forever After. Previously, Weezer had planned to include an early version of My Best Friend from Make Believe in Shrek 2, but it was rejected due to the song sounding too much like it was written for Shrek. And this will end today's segment. Thank you so much for listening to The Journey Through Rock, Rockers. This is DJ Blue reminding you to tune in to Penguin Radio, and see you next time.